Welcome to Vertical Life Church. I want to say welcome to all of you here with us for the very first time. We believe at Vertical Life Church that if you come here, that you are a VIP. You are a very important person. Why? Because everyone matters to God, and so that you matter to us. And so we are thankful that you chose to spend some of your freezing cold morning with us here today. But I believe and I trust that God has something special in store for us today, and that in our prayers is that we're a blessing to you, and we help you along in your spiritual journey. And so thank you for coming. My name is Joey. I'm the lead pastor here at Vertical Life Church, and on behalf of our church, we want to say welcome and hope that you come back another time and just join in the journey of what God is doing. Now, today is the last series in our book, in our series on Nehemiah called Now is the Time. Today is the last week, and I've enjoyed this series. I kind of, as we've been going through this series, I've seen kind of how God has been working through our church and forming our church and bringing us to this place in our life. And as we've come to the end, we need to realize that this isn't the end, but this is just the beginning. We are beginning a journey to go from where we are now to the fulfillment of what God has called us to be. And I believe that He has given us a great purpose. I believe that He has declared a word over us, that He has given us a revelation. But before I believe in this truly remarkable thing that I believe God has spoken for our church, we need to caution ourselves. Because if we're not careful, and if we're not intentional about staying connected to God, pursuing the path of a change maker, what we've been talking about through this entire series, that if we pursue the path of a change maker without keeping our focus and attention on staying connected to God, that can actually lead to the ruin of our church as opposed to the success of our church. See, when I was younger, I was pretty ambitious, especially in the workplace. My whole goal whenever I got hired at a job was to end up running the place. And so I would just like do everything I could to excel and to advance myself. And the reason is because as I was growing up in my home church in Missouri, my pastor, he once said that if you wanted to get ahead in life, you just had to work hard because there was so little competition out there. And so that phrase stuck in my mind thinking, you know what, if I just outshined everyone, then I could end up being the boss and then everyone would have to do what I had to say. So I took that to heart, and through many of the jobs I worked, I found that whenever I didn't come in late or no call, no show, whenever I was on time, whenever I busted my butt from clock in to clock out right there when I got on the job, that my bosses and my managers begin to take notice, and the more responsibility I would get and the faster I would be promoted. And I liked getting promoted. It was a lot of fun. And so that was my goal for every new job, was to see how I could increase my pay and my responsibilities. Now, when Tony and I were newly married, I worked for a Christian bookstore in Springfield, and it took me about a year before I became the head of two different departments. When I first got hired, there was another guy in the place that I wanted, and he was my supervisor. We became friends. We got along really well, but in the back of my head and in my heart, I secretly prayed every day for him to quit and go somewhere else, because that's the job I wanted. I wanted to be boss. I wanted to be in charge. Plus, I thought I could do his job better than him anyways. You're right? So this was just my arrogance and things. And so, you know, as I began to pray and begin to work, I worked hard. He finally did. He quit and he went to work somewhere else. And I was promoted to the department head. I got that position. And I was so pumped because now all the things I thought that I would do if I was in charge, I could begin to do them. I got right to work implementing all my genius processes and ideas and philosophies, and all the schedule problems we had with all my coworkers, those things began to be fixed and got worked out. All the missing assignments and things that we were behind on, that began to get all worked out. And I even began to develop a really good relationship with our corporate officers, just, you know, through phone conversations and letting them know what challenges and issues that we were having and finding out that I was fixing their problems for them that they didn't even know. And so I thought everything was going really well. And every week, we had to manually order all the product that we had by reconciling the counts to seeing what our system said and what we actually had on hand. And between all of that stuff, our numbers were really good. Things were moving well. They seemed to be really efficient and going great. Until I got a call to go into the principal's office for my general manager. And so I was like, okay, you know, I'm getting a raise. You know, this is going to be awesome. And so I get into my manager's office, and he said, you know, you're doing a great job. You guys are up to date. You're first to turn in all your work, but the people in your department are unhappy. And that shocked me. I was like, what do you mean they're unhappy? Things are going awesome. And the thing was, is they felt like I didn't do anything. And I was like, what do you mean I don't do anything? I kind of got defensive because I was definitely doing something. I was managing and supervising while they did all the work. That's what I was doing, right? Because that's what leaders do, right? That's what leaders do. Whenever you're in that position, you make sure everyone else is doing what they're supposed to do, and you kind of just sit back and watch it happen. But I guess they weren't real happy with that. And, you know, I didn't want them to be mad at me. I felt like, you know, that this wasn't a really good thing. So I called a department meeting. We talked about some stuff. I made some adjustments so that they felt like I was pulling my weight. And what I learned in that situation was that a good leader leads by example. A good leader leads in a way that inspires others to follow in their footsteps. And this is the kind of leader that Nehemiah, the guy we've been looking at, you know, all month long and through this series, Nehemiah was an incredible leader. In Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 21 through 23, this is what Nehemiah records. He says, as they were building the wall and restoring the wall of Jerusalem, he says, we worked early and late from sunrise to sunset. Half the men were always on guard. I told everyone living outside the walls to stay in Jerusalem. That way they and their servants could help with guard duty and night and work during the day. During this time, none of us, not I, nor my relatives, nor my servants, nor the guards who were with me, ever took off our clothes. We carried our weapons with us at all times, even when we went for water. So here in Nehemiah, he set the example by staying in the thick of it with his people. If they weren't changing their clothes, he wasn't going to change their clothes. If they had to be prepared for battle, he was prepared for battle. And so often, when we set our sights on position, when all we can see is getting that position, getting that promotion, we have all the passion in the world. We have endless amounts of passion until we get the position. And then at that point where we finally have been elevated, we get to sit back in our chairs, prop up our feet, and say, wow, now I don't have to work anymore. I've arrived. That's now someone else's job. We feel a sense of pride because now we think people should respect us because of our position. And deep inside, we want them to say, or we say, hey, look at me. Look how great I am. We want people to give us those accolades and that recognition. And before long, as we are reveling in our position and our promotion, something begins to disappear, and that's the passion. And when the passion goes, so does the work. And if this happens to us as a church, we will become like every other church that once had record numbers, exciting times, and impacted lives. We will be reduced to a few number of people who have aged beyond retirement, giving nearly everything they have to keep the doors open and wondering what happened and where all the people went. You see, pride, if pride is our driving force, pride will drive us toward position, but then position will drive us to comfort. Comfort leads to laziness, and laziness leads to our downfall. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, the King Solomon, he says that pride goes before destruction and haughtiness before a fall. This word haughtiness, I know we all use this every day in our everyday language, right? This is a word that's so common. You see hashtag haughtiness on Twitter. You know, this is something we're all familiar with. No. But this word, it literally means the appearance or quality of being arrogantly superior or disdainful. That pride goes before destruction, and haughtiness, this arrogance, this quality of being superior, goes before a fall. And when we are haughty as the people of God, when we become prideful, when this ministry becomes all about me, what I like, what I think, what I feel entitles me to be served rather than to be a servant, as we inspire to be change makers, we need to keep this perspective right. The perspective that we have, or else we are going to end up far beyond what we believe that God intends for us as a church. And in John chapter 3, verse 30, John the Baptist, he was the kind of the forerunner, the prophet before Christ came on the scene. And John's ministry exploded from day one. And he had many disciples. Matter of fact, Jesus said that John was the greatest man to have ever lived. He was the greatest prophet. Matter of fact, Jesus was even baptized by John the Baptist. This is how great a man John was. John's ministry rivaled Jesus Christ. He was a prominent guy because of his ministry and his service. And his ministry began to rival Jesus when Jesus began his ministry. And here's what John said in John 3, verse 30 about Jesus Christ. He says, "He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less." Even though John had position, he had followers, he had a great ministry, his entire focus was that Jesus should be the greatest and I should be the least. And so our perspective as a change maker is not that we should have great position, but rather Jesus should be great in us. That should be our perspective. Our focus should be on our passion for Christ, doing His will, being His witnesses, and bringing hope and change into the world, not what we can become. And I think every one of us in this room, if we would be honest, we would say that we would want position. We'd be lying if we said we didn't want position. We'd be lying if we said we didn't want to feel important or be recognized. Who doesn't? Who doesn't want to feel superior, even if it's in a little way, a smallest way? Who doesn't want to be in charge and kind of have that authority? Most of us would say we do. But we need to understand that in the kingdom and economy of God, Jesus said in Matthew 19:30 that the first will be last and the last will be first. In Matthew 23:11-12, Jesus says, "The greatest among you must be a servant, but those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." See, as a church, we should not strive toward position, but we should strive toward passion. Passion in our worship, in serving God as His faithful witnesses. And if we do this, we have a promise of God in James chapter 4, verse 10. James says, "Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up in honor." See, if our focus is in our passion for God and loving Him with our whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, passion will lead to position. And when God lifts you up, there will be great blessing. People will take notice because of what God is doing in your life and through you, and you will be in a position to make a difference in someone else's life. You will be elevated to a change maker. And Nehemiah, this is his story. Nehemiah was an official in King Artaxerxes' court who at one day could drink his last drink. His life was expendable. He was a slave. He was the cupbearer to the king. Basically, he was a one-step filter for poison for the king. He drank the cup to make sure that the cup wasn't poisoned to protect the king's life. But even though he had this situation where his life was basically meaningless, he humbled himself before God. And because of a great concern, he trusted God with his impossible vision. He stepped out in faith, appealing to God's promises, not his own worthiness as a man. And God took this humble cupbearer and made him a king. Nehemiah was elevated to become the governor of Judah while he oversaw the work of the restoration of Israel. But it wasn't position that Nehemiah was after. It wasn't position that Nehemiah desired. It was his impossible vision coming to pass. It was seeing the city restored and the nation restored. His passion led him to remain humble, which kept him under the blessings of God. In Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 14 through 19, the word of the Lord records that for the entire 12 years that I was governor of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of the reign of King Artaxerxes, neither I nor my officials drew on our official food allowance. The former governors, in contrast, had laid heavy burdens on the people, demanding a daily ration of food and wine, besides 40 pieces of silver. Even their assistants took advantage of the people. But because I feared God, I did not act that way. He wasn't scared of God, even though a proper understanding of God will give you an element of fear. No, he had deep reverence for God. He had deep respect for God, passion for God. And that's what led him to not act in the same way as the former governors. Continuing in verse 16, he says, I also devoted myself to working on the wall and refused to acquire any land, and I required all my servants to spend time working on the wall. I asked for nothing, even though I regularly fed 150 Jewish officials at my table beside all the visitors from the lands. The provisions I paid for each day include one ox, six choice sheep or goats, a large number of poultry, and every 10 days we needed a large supply of all kinds of wine. Yet I refused to claim the governor's food allowance because the people already carried a heavy burden. Remember, oh my God, all that I have done for these people, and bless me for it. Nehemiah was last, and God made him first. And as God begins to pour out a great blessing on our church, which I believe is in store for this church, I believe we're seeing the beginning of that blessing. We will be tempted to get a little full of ourselves. We will be tempted to feel entitled. We will be tempted to lose sight of why God led us to plant this church to begin with. This church was planted in Clio, Michigan, not for us, but for this community. It was so that we could engage people where they are and lead them to becoming fully developed followers of Jesus Christ. This is why we're here. It was to bring change into this city and in the surrounding counties. So we need to keep our mission in focus and let our passion for that mission be the driving force as we work together in this ministry. But like I said at the beginning of the message this morning, this church has a great calling. I'd like to draw your attention to the logo on the screen. See, as I was praying through God, what would have me preach at the beginning of this year, and I knew this series was what he was leading me to preach and what it was kind of going to be about. I started to kind of daydream and try to think about, you know, how could we, you know, advertise? What kind of logo should we have for this? And I started daydreaming and brainstorming about it. And I wanted the logo to pop. I wanted it to be eye-catching as something that, you know, the little invite cards that we have on the VIP table, I wanted it to be something that we could continue to use even after the series was over and over. And so this image popped into my head. And now, I'm not the best graphic artist. Matter of fact, if you know someone that does graphic design that wants to do some freelance for free work for us, then I'm all about handing that over to somebody else. So, but I put this together, and I had to gather the elements to make it happen, kind of like the way Jesus gathered us together as a church. See, to do an image like this, you have to start with a blank screen, literally nothing. And then you have to capture other elements in layers, and you add each layer on top of the other. So my first layer was kind of a purple background. It's kind of hard to see on the screen because of the lighting. But I started out with this purple background, and I tweaked it a little bit because it was the foundation. And then I picked out the type style so the words could easily be displayed, but also draw your attention. And I kind of messed with the lighting and the color there and began to just kind of put it together. And I knew in my mind I wanted a clock on there, so I went online, went to find some free clocks, and I finally found this one. And, you know, just kind of said, oh, that one looks cool, and grabbed it and downloaded it. And so I put it all together, and once I had it done, I sent my design to the approval department in my family, which is my wife. She never hesitates to tell me when things suck, and that's great because it makes me not suck in front of people. And so I sent it to her, and she thought it was good, so I was like, all right, we're good to go. I stamped it, and you sent it out, and that was it. And so we started our series. We started preaching and talking through Nehemiah. And a few weeks after the series started, I had the invite cards at the house, and she was just looking at them, and she was looking at the card, and she looked at the clock, and she's like, you know, what's the time on the clock mean? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, the time on there. I was like, well, nothing. I mean, when I was designing the graphic, I just pulled a clock off that I liked, and I thought about having a blank clock and then doing something sweet with the time and making it all cool and subliminal and like, you know, really super awesome, but then I realized that's going to take a lot of work, and I was too lazy to do that. So I didn't. I just grabbed a clock, and so I was like, nothing. You know, it's just the clock. And so she's like, oh, well, I thought maybe it had a meaning or something, and I was kind of shrugged it off. I was like, not intentionally anyway. And then I got curious. I was like, maybe there is something to this clock. Maybe there's a reason why I chose this clock. And so I asked her what time was on the clock, and she said 9:26. And so curiously and with great anticipation, maybe this was going to be like one of those fortune cookie moments where you're going through a situation, you open the cookie and it says something exactly fitting to what you're going through. And I was just thinking, oh, God's going to like have this great revelation for our church and it's just going to be mind blowing. And so I opened the Bible to Nehemiah 26 and this is what it said. But despite all this, they were disobedient. They rebelled against you. They turned their backs on your law. They killed your prophets who warned them to return to you, and they committed terrible blasphemies. My jaw hit the floor. And I was like, what in the heck does that mean, God? You know, we're talking about being change makers. Now is the time. And you choose this verse to be our theme verse or to be our prophecy or special revelation. And I'm just like, when I started this church, I told you I didn't think I could do it. I was going to mess it all up. And now you're telling me, yeah, you're going to mess this thing up. And it's going to be really bad. And I was freaking out. And so then I started thinking about the statistics that how 80% of church plants die within the first 2 years. And I prayed and prayed and prayed that we weren't part of this statistic. But then I started thinking about all of these things and I started to panic, shout and pray to God. But then I started to calm myself down and think, you know, you're just being irrational. I dismissed it just like anybody else would do. Oh, no, that's not probably nothing. I was just being superstitious, I thought to myself. And I went on with the rest of the events of the day. But then I couldn't let it go. I couldn't shake this feeling that there was something about the clock. There was something about this verse. I didn't know what it was. Nehemiah 9:26. And so I began to pray. I was like, God, what is this? You said that if we lack wisdom, to pray and you'll give us wisdom. So tell me what this crazy, whacked out verse is saying to me. And then I heard a whisper in my head that said, look at the clock again. And I'm going to invite the praise team to come down now at this time as we start closing. I looked at the clock again, and I looked closely, and I looked at the shorthand, and it's definitely on the 9. And then I looked at the longhand, but just to make sure I didn't miss anything, I started counting at 25. I said 25, 26, and I'm like, oh, it's not on the 26. It's on the 27. So I opened the Bible again to Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 27. And I realized that to get context, I needed to read 26 because it led right into 27 just so that I could know what this verse meant. And so beginning again in Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 26, the word of the Lord declares, but despite all this, they were disobedient and rebelled against you. They turned their backs on your law. They killed your prophets who warned them to return to you. They committed terrible blasphemies. Verse 27. So you handed them over to their enemies who made them suffer. But in their time of trouble, they cried to you. You heard them from heaven. And in your great mercy, you sent them liberators who rescued them from their enemies. Verse 27 says, but in their time of great trouble, they cried to you, and you heard from heaven. What did God speak to our church in preparation for this series? He spoke that the training phase was over and that now is the time. Now is the time to stand up and be who He's called us to be, that He's heard from heaven and He's unleashing us now into this city. Verse 27 in Nehemiah chapter 9, it continues and it says, in your great mercy, you sent them liberators who rescued them from their enemies. And as I think of where our church has come from, we live in a land and of a people who have turned their backs on the scriptures, churches who have ran off their spiritual leaders appointed by God. We live in a land that is depressed economically and spiritually. And yet a great many people that I've met over the course of the few years that I've lived here have been crying out for God to send a flood of revival, a flood of life change into this area. And I believe in their time of trouble, the people of this land, as they've been crying out to God, in His great mercy, He has heard their cries. And He has sent them liberators. The word liberate means to free from a situation, especially imprisonment or slavery, in which liberty is severely restricted, or release someone from a state or situation that limits freedom of thought or behavior. A liberator is a change maker. And I believe God has spoken this over our church. I believe this is His revelation to us. I believe that His word to us, church, is that the time is now. The time is now to rise up and be who He's called us to be. He has called us to be liberators and change makers, setting our friends and our families free from their sinful condition. I believe He's called us to release people from their addictions, from their poverty, from depression, from sickness and oppression, that now is the time for us to rise to this challenge, to rise to be. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Now is the time. Now is the time, Vertical Life Church, to rise up as liberators, to rise up as change makers, to break the chains that are holding the people we love down. Now is the time to take your place. And that's my challenge to you here today. If you are prepared, if you are ready to stand and take your place as a liberator in this community, as a change maker, then together as one, I'm going to ask you to stand to your feet. And let's declare in worship that God, we're going to answer your call. If you're ready to be a change maker, to be a liberator, then let's stand together and let's pray and let's cry out to God and let's declare this truth over our church.